Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Episode 10, The Clocks.
If you've ever been shot at in Sicily, dined by the water's edge on the sun-drenched Isle of Capri, done business on the strangest of Italian towns, been banged up in Rome's infamous jail, wept at a much-loved matriarch's funeral, and been marched out of St. Peter's by the Swiss Guard. If you've ever savored the brilliance and diversity of Italian cuisine, been overwhelmed by their art and architecture, sold 10,000 rugby shirts to Italian fashion houses, and finally, grammatically escaped from using the infinitive and arrived at the conditional, then there is most certainly an intriguing tale to be told. You're listening to Italia 77.
At this point in time, the winter of discontent culminated in the election of Margaret Thatcher as Prime Minister in May 1979. Thatcher's Conservative government introduced major restrictions on trade union power. After nearly 30 years, the production lines for the Volkswagen Beetle shut down, having manufactured in excess of 20 million cars.
He's back, he's alive, and he's kicking. Big Teddy makes a timely return to this somewhat horologically themed episode of Italia 77. Over to you, JRH. Let's not waste another second. There's no time to lose. Horologically? That's a tough old word.
That's fine, Ian. I think you just about got away with it.
On a summer trip of Ian's back to the UK, Ted says he wants to talk to him about a project. Still banned from driving, he arrives with his chauffeur at a designated country pub for an update. Little E, you know I'm the world's largest manufacturer of cushion covers. Yes, Ted. What else am I the world's largest manufacturer of? Beanbags, Ted, says Ian, rolling his eyes. Very good, Little E. But guess what Big Teddy is the largest manufacturer of now? Haven't got a clue, Ted. There's a long, silent pause, followed by the usual contorted face and his signature finger and cheek popping sound. With relish, he declares, Garden Gates! We don't want to explain this development. It's too complicated. But rest assured, it had large components of chaos in its coming about. Anyhow, he has another project, and Ian will finally breathe a sigh of relief. He didn't fancy even talking about Garden Gates, let alone the possibility of getting involved in a venture with them. What's the deal? Ian asks. Pausing again for effect, triumphantly he announces, Clocks. Here's the background. Ted was specifically talking about antique regulator clocks, which are wall-mounted, weight-driven, and regulated by a swinging pendulum. Invented in the late 18th century, they improved upon the accuracy of spring-wound clocks, having separate mechanisms for the minute and the hour hands. One of the main manufacturers was the Ansonia Company in Connecticut, USA, and they were often sold to schools as well as privately. A well-restored original could be valued at anywhere from $500 up to $1,500. Having bought one particularly battered clock from a market stall, Ted had it restored and sold it privately, making a tidy profit in the process. His commercial instinct led him to realise that there might just be a business here. The problem was that there were very few regulator clocks in the UK that hadn't already been restored. So supply was an issue. Where could you find stock in poor condition? Where in the world? Well, he had a light bulb moment. India and the days of the Raj. Schools from all over India, as well as offices of the East India Company, the government and other sundry users scattered across the entire subcontinent. "This is why I am Big Teddy and you are Little E," he crows. Cue finger and cheek pop. Anyway, Ted had some good Indian connections and pursued his project. Now, whether he got lucky or not, Ian doesn't know. But he found a bulk furniture trader who had amassed, among other things, 4,000 of these school clocks. And even better, they were in poor condition, ready to be cut up and used for firewood. Not being one to dither, he jumped on a plane to Calcutta and cut a deal at a ridiculous $3 a clock and shipped them all the way back to Lancashire. So there you have it. To add to his illustrious credentials, he is now the world's largest wholesaler of antique regulator clocks. He didn't particularly want to get into the restoration business and wasn't quite sure how to proceed with his gold-plated business opportunity. Maybe you could move them on in bulk to some Italian restoration company. Florence must be full of them, he muses. Yes, but they are locked into real Renaissance renovations, not school clocks from Connecticut, he encounters. Nevertheless, he agrees to give it some thought. Something about the clock situation is bothering Ian, and on the flight back to Italy, he realises just what it is. He remembers that when they were in Washington, D.C., Kit's sister Patty had a lovely wall clock in her house. Back in Florence, he calls her as part of market research and she confirms it is an Ansonia regulator and she paid a fair bit of money for it too. Not only that, but also this style of look is very much in vogue in America. Clocks like this are sought after as they meet the balance of qualifying criteria as antiques but aren't overly expensive. So what next? Ian goes to L'Americana's University where, as suspected, they have the Yellow Pages phone book for New York. Looking under antique clocks retail, he finds a few businesses, some of which have subheadings of restorers too. Copying all of the phone numbers down, he notices that one particular listing has several stores, boasting retail outlets in Florida and Virginia. We have a breakthrough. His hunch is finally paying off. The Coletti family from Brooklyn have bitten. It's a family business specialising in antique clocks with a few shops and a repair facility. Surprised by the large number of regulators, they can see a relatively long-term business opportunity evolving. It's a father and son managed operation, and Ian has now had three conversations with the father, Tony, and he's keen. Ted has sent some photographs, no Instagram back then. And the commercial parameters have been set out. They have to buy the entire job lot, but with a significant discount. A positive next step is they have agreed to come to England to view the stock. Always a good sign. If you make the commitment to travel, there is also the subliminal influence to do the deal. Coordinating the rendezvous, Ian realises that he has to fleetingly return to England and oversee the introductions and to chaperone the early stage of the negotiations. L'Americana keeps him company, but she has no wish to get involved with Ted again. I will be polite, but I am not going to indulge any of his humour. I'm not giving him any encouragement at all. He's just going to get a deadpan reception from me. They meet with Ted an hour before Tony Coletti and his son Franco arrive on the overnight red-eye from JFK. It's early morning and they're all having a coffee in the arrivals lounge. L'Americana, true to her pledge, is politely engaging in the conversation, but with an extremely determined po-face. Ted is now in full flow recounting a recent escapade. Ian can't stop himself from laughing out loud, but Kit is resolutely refusing even the hint of a smile. One can't help but admire her steadfast single-mindedness. But that wasn't the punchline. It was just the first of a series of finales, each one funnier than the last. Helplessly, Ian looks over at his American friend, and she just cannot control herself anymore. And she explodes into hysterical, uncontrollable laughter. With tears streaming down her face, she beats the table repeatedly, furious at her failure of willpower. Our Brooklyn boys arrive looking rather ragged after an overnight flight with virtually no sleep. As sharp as these New Yorkers seem to be, it's actually their first trip out of America. On a plaque beneath the Statue of Liberty guarding New York's harbour are the words on the plinth, "Give me your thirsty, your famished, your befuddled masses." Well, there was no such greeting on the concrete walls of Manchester Airport to reverse welcome our new American friends. Befuddled they may have been with their new surroundings and lack of sleep, but they had now entered the world of Big Teddy. There was just the slightest chance that the befuddlement might possibly get a whole lot worse. Tony and his son Franco are genuinely nice guys, classic Italo-Americanos. The dad is in his 60s, very thoughtful and clearly extremely knowledgeable about this business. Ian is worried that Ted, although he obviously knows a bit about this sector, might overplay his hand and expose his limited knowledge. But so far, so good. Franco is about 30 and a very typical New Yorker. Both of them are wide-eyed as they absorb the Lancashire countryside from Ted's chauffeur-driven people carrier. Concerned that they make a good initial impression, Ian is asking nice, folksy questions about Brooklyn and their business, whilst pointing out features in the foothills of the Pennines, just hoping that Ted will gently follow his lead. It was at this point that Ted turns to the visitors and says, "You know what? I once dated a girl from Brooklyn." Oh dear me, Ian is getting worried now. "Once when we were at it, she said to me, 'Why don't you call my name out when we make love?' So I said, 'Sorry, didn't want to wake you up.'" He laughs, then the contorted face and the cheek pop. Here we go again, we think, but there is absolutely no reaction from the Brooklynites. He's not going to stop there, is he? You know him better than that. "She wasn't very clever," he continues. "She saw a sign saying, 'Keep off the grass.' So she went on to cocaine. Pop! Big Teddy can't be stopped. She was so desperate to get married that her mother put a sign in their garden saying, 'Last girl before the highway.'" Finally, he gets a smirk off Franco. This could be a long day. At 10:30 a.m., they pull into the Duckworth Arms near Ramsbottom. Now, the pub is technically closed at this time, but Ted, now banging on the door, has a relationship with the landlord, who opens up privately for them. Striding in, he announces, "We need a bottle of Moët and Chandon and two more on ice." Tony and Franco are absolutely knackered, and the last thing they need is to start on a drinking session. However, as they are staying the next couple of nights at Ted's lovely house, they want to be polite and accordingly sip champagne overlooking the Rossendale Valley at what is 5:30 a.m. US time. Ted calms down a little, turns on the charm, and adds his extra factor of subtle salesmanship. The Colettis, aided by the champagne, now begin to enjoy their surroundings and their first overseas adventure. Even though they're on the third bottle now, Ted's plan is to take them to the nearby warehouse where his stock is waiting. Cleverly, he wants to briefly open the kimono today with a full examination of the merchandise scheduled for tomorrow. Afterwards, the plan is to go back to Ted's for a barbecue and an early night. With the itinerary planned, conversation going well, and a rapport building up, Ian looks at L'Americana and they share a surprised nod of approval. Then, just when things were looking really good, Big Teddy returns from the pub's kitchen with a mop. He turns it upside down and, like a ventriloquist dummy, stares lovingly at the coarse strings of yarn. the room goes silent. And Ian can see his commission disappearing out of the window. Ted engages with the mop head, stroking it gently, and with moistening eyes sings, "When I fall in love, it will be forever." Yep, Nat King Cole is alive and well, crooning in the Rossendale Valley. Ian's heart sinks when a stony-faced Tony gets up and walks towards Ted, grabbing the mop as if to throw it to the ground. "This is the end of it," Ian whispers to Kit. But illogically, Tony turns round and, gazing at the mop head, responds, "In a restless world like this is, love is ended before it's begun." Clearly, a Nat King Cole fan. Then, in a makeshift duet, the pair of them serenade the increasingly attractive mop, and too many moonlight kisses seem to cool in the warmth of the sun. Backslapping, finger and cheek popping, and facial contortions. "Phew, we just dodged a bullet there," says Ian to the applauding L'Americain. At the quick preview of the merchandise, Ted moves into his smooth sales routine, in which, to be fair to him, he doesn't overplay his hand. As much as he shows some excellent samples, equally he pulls out some badly damaged clocks, as well as some which are just cases, with no mechanisms at all. It didn't really matter, as the Americans were plastered and barely able to stand up. Driving back to his house, we pass a massive wholesale frozen food warehouse. Little E, who do you think owns that? With a world-weary smile, Ian dutifully replies, "You, Big Teddy." This time he delivers his pop with the little finger of his right hand, his special variation for these extra special occasions. The largest frozen food wholesaler in the Rossendale Valley, he intimates. "But not the world," Ian adds. Ted just gives Ian one of those looks. Back at Ted's house now, he starts opening more champagne and encourages the Brooklynites to get a second wind. However, he now starts to get a little bit chippy, not dissimilar to what he did with Ivo Spittori in Rome. So Ian is delighted to see the father excuse himself and go to bed. Then it starts. He says to Franco, "What have you done to build the family business?" The continued line of questioning is inferring that it's all due to his dad and that he is just a bit of a layabout. Now it's getting worse. "What type of clock is that on the mantelpiece?" he challenges Franco. "It's a carriage clock," Franco replies. "We all know that, but what type of carriage clock?" Franco shrugs his shoulders, only for Ted to needlessly say, "I think your dad will be disappointed in that answer." I can see where this is going. Ted is going to alienate the very persons he wants to sell to, and the commission is once again on the endangered list. Ian tries to change the situation by getting on to the subject of the barbecue. All seems to be getting better, with Kit also deflecting tricky situations. But then it starts again. "You Americans think you know a lot about barbecuing, don't you? You Yanks think you know a lot about steak." He disappears into his utility room and returns carrying a Santa Claus-sized see-through polythene bag, filled with what must have been 30 or 40 frozen steaks, and throws them onto the floor at Franco's feet. "I'll give you a bloody steak. I'm Big Teddy." L'Americana and Ian have now seen enough. They get the heck out of there and aim back to Florence, leaving the whole deal in the hands of fate. Miraculously, the deal is finalised at a tasty $18 a unit. Mind you, it took Ian nearly 2 years to get his commission from you-know-who.
Italia 77 was devised, written and introduced by me, Ian McAllister, and read by Richard Greenwood, who also contributed to the writing. It was recorded and produced by Tom Allam and Nigel Heath at La Cucina Studios, London, and edited by Stu Smith, Nigel Heath and Jamie Allen. If you've enjoyed the show, please hit the like button, subscribe and consider leaving a review. Italia 77 is a Zacuti production. Be sure to keep listening. There's plenty more adventures to come.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You hear that? That's the sound of Pepsi Zero Sugar, the better tasting, more refreshing Zero Sugar Cola. Listen to that endless pour. Pure refreshment. If it sounds this good, just imagine how it tastes. Oh yeah, so good. Pepsi Zero Sugar. Let your taste decide.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.